The Adonis Audio Experience. This episode is brought to you by the Cigar Factory Outlet. Now more than ever, it is critical to get your smokes online. No one does that better than the Cigar Factory Outlet in South Norwalk, Connecticut. You can go to www.discountcigars.org or just hop on the Google and type in Cigar Factory Outlet, Norwalk, Connecticut. It doesn't matter if you're from New York City or somewhere out in Idaho, the Cigar Factory Outlet will ship to wherever you are. Welcome to the Adonis Audio Experience. It wouldn't be fair enough if we didn't have all the Philpos represented as far as the Philpo brothers. So Jose and I would like to bring in our younger brother, a true progressive at heart, Fidel. Fidel, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me. You know, good to finally have a true progressive here to help, you know, spread the good news and the good work that's being done.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So, you know, Jose and I have been talking about the quarantine. We've been talking about politics. And one of the things we were getting into was really the Bernie Sanders run. Now, you know, obviously we all have our own takes on it. My take in particular, you know, I've stated it in a few episodes. And as you heard, the political one I did about Joe Biden has no chance, right? Little did I know. But I did have Bernie's back to a certain extent. And I'm sure you can attest to that from listening to it. And yeah. Now we're at present day. And how does the news of Bernie... I guess he's dropping out, right? His name's on the ballot still, but he's dropping out of the race.
Yeah, I don't agree with that move. I believe you're either all in or all out. I don't believe in half-assing anything. So his, like, and if anything, because I think it makes us look worse, because his, like, I'm suspending my campaign, but my name's still on the ballot to collect delegates, but that doesn't inspire people to go out and vote for you to obtain those delegates. And with your name on the ballot, then for the 23 remaining states, you end up looking like, oh, you see, he didn't have as much power as he thought he had. So I feel like it does more damage than good. So either he should have stayed, I thought he should have stayed until the bitter end, until the convention. I would have went to the convention myself, Corona or not. And like,
yeah.
or get out and tell the establishment, tell Biden, like, okay, I'm leaving. And if you want this movement, if you want my people behind me, you need to do like 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
He kind of didn't either. And he's like, well, and it's because at the end of the day, Bernie's just too nice of a man. Like every time he talks about Biden, he's like, my friend Joe. And it's like,
yeah, yeah. Well, they've all been playing sweethearts with each other in this race, I feel, because 2016 left such just a dark impression on from the DNC standpoint that I felt like they were more friendlier in the sand. They were just more clever with how they did it. And, you know, I did feel like Biden was taking some of Bernie's ideas and saying, oh yeah, Bernie, that's a great idea. I'm actually going to implement that. So then it makes Biden like, you know, the referee, if you will, or the authority in the room. And I think he used that to his advantage in some of the debates, if you notice, when Bernie was talking about like the how to fund education programs and things like that. And, you know, Biden would jump into the debate and say, oh yeah, you know what, Bernie, that is a great idea. And we're actually going to start working on that.
The thing is, I don't believe there's a trust factor. Like, as a progressive, I don't really trust Joe Biden to do anything he that comes out of his mouth, because the only thing we can look at is look at people's records. And Joe Biden's record does not look like a record that has been serving of the people.
Yeah, well, that's very fair. And I don't disagree with that point. One thing I am curious about when it comes to Bernie is that he's been in Senate for 30 years. And
he's been in Congress.
In for, Congress, for right? Years.
He was in Representatives and then he went to Senate. But
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just what are the staple pieces of legislation that he's been kind of attached to? I mean, I know he was part of, you know, the freedom rights and, you know, he was part of Selma and all that kind of stuff. But in Congress and the Senate, I just don't see big ideas really coming through his platform. And when you look at Vermont, you know, Vermont's kind of like a state where it's kind of like they don't want you doing a lot of stuff anyway from a government standpoint. So it's hard to really tell how Bernie would truly govern. And I think that that's what hurt him at the end. And I don't know if you agree with that. But that was kind of my take on it.
I disagree because he's a senator of Vermont. He's not the governor of Vermont. And true. I think people get that confused. When you're a senator, you are the federal representative from the state. You don't govern the state.
Very fair.
And he doesn't have his a federal representative of the state. He doesn't have power in the state.
That's a very fair point.
But he doesn't have government power.
He has
his vote ban. The biggest thing is you know, he's true to his word. He won't necessarily, he will compromise to get things done, but compromise in a way where things are actually done successfully, not just compromise his values. And he has done a big form. He's been like a big practitioner of the VA for veterans' rights. You know, veterans for return were a big movement.
Yeah.
He voted against the war in Iraq. He was a big voice against that war. He was the big voice against the first Gulf War.
Now,
he's been talking about actual Wall Street reform,
not
whatever reform that was done in 2008
where
we bailed out the banks, but we couldn't bail out middle America. Yeah.
Now, when we talk about reform and fighting those battles, did you guys see that whole thing with Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney was like, oh, you know, I'm going to vote to impeach on one of these articles out of the two articles, and I can't name them specifically right now, but there was two articles on the table.
Yeah.
And you know, and it was one of those votes where you knew everybody was voting no anyway, but you just kind of wanted to stake, you know, your place in history and saying, oh, I was against this person for doing wrong.
I was a brave Republican.
Yeah.
He just wanted some news.
Now, in sharing that point, I don't know if you guys agree, is that could that be into play with Bernie a little bit too? And knowing that, you know what, people are overwhelmingly going to vote for the war anyway. So if he casts a vote saying, I'm not for this, it's kind of like that's bravery, but it's almost falling on deaf ears.
But then he can Monday morning quarterback it, right, when it doesn't work out?
And that's a good point.
No, because he kept the same energy. I mean, I feel like it's easy to say that after the fact, but during the fact, everyone was for the war, except for him and Barbara Lee from California. They were the only lone voices in the whole of all of Congress and all 435 representatives. I mean, they were keeping that same energy before, during, and after. It's only now people are like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have gone and killed 600,000 people.
Yeah. Now, you know, for the people who are listening in, you know, obviously there's an age gap between the three of us. Fidel, you're more on the younger side of the progressive movement, and obviously
I'm the cutoff date for a millennial.
That's right.
Millennials, I just was reading it. It's 1980 to 1994, so I'm like the last millennial.
That's right. Depending on what you're reading, because... I got this debate, and Jose, I know you're laughing, but the Zennial will be represented on this show, and that is from 1977 to 1985. It's that Gen X millennial mixture where we know what the dark days were like, and we also know what it's like to be immersed in the digital age versus to the claim with millennials is kind of like they grew up with the technology right in front of them. And that's a representation of kind of this generation. But then obviously you have Gen Z that's coming along.
Yeah.
And then
I think you bleed into millennial a little bit, but if you want to stay on that side.
You're just an older form. You're just a type of millennial. You're just like the first type of millennial.
You know, because the generation has to be 20 years. So, you know,
if you look at us, we're good because you're at the beginning. I'm at the end and Jose's in the middle. So we have a good spread.
Poppy was
good.
But we check all the boxes.
Oh man, well, I don't know where I got to with that point, but one of the things that found it is that on your side of it, are you seeing that younger millennials are looking at the option of Trump as a viable option? Like in 2016 when this thing, and No, and here's my question is that
when Hillary actually, one of my close friends texted me like yesterday saying like I think I'm voting for Trump, and I was like I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not against people who voted for Trump.
Wow. Okay, so you have heard other people in the mix saying, you know what, I'm just going to vote for Trump because Hillary wasn't a good candidate for the progressive movement, and is Biden
Hillary
a good
wasn't
candidate?
A good candidate. Period. Not for the progressive. She just was not a good candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. And I think that that was one of the problems with her candidacy was the fact that she wasn't going to relate to younger voters as much. And to your point, your friend kind of texting you and saying, I'm probably just going to vote for Trump. I think in these pockets, in these hot pockets, in these districts of, the Rust Belt or, other parts in rural areas and, people are just making that decision, especially younger progressives, and saying, listen, Trump, there's a level of transparency to Trump. And I don't know if you appreciate that, too, from the progressive standpoint, if that level of transparency is appreciated.
Well, that's actually like the reason what my friend said. She's like, look, at least we know what we're getting. We don't know what we're getting with, with the alternative. And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to sell it to me. I personally could not vote for the man. I personally will just, stay home. But I'm not I'm not content like condemning anyone who does vote for him. I mean, it's your vote. You do what you like. He speaks to issues. I mean, he ran to the left on some issues that Hillary is on. And like, I still think he's still kind of to the left of Joe Biden, just record alone.
Yeah.
So like, he was a Democrat most of his life. So,
Is that right? Well, it's funny. I saw a documentary with Jared Kushner. It was on Netflix, and it just talks about money. And it talks about how Jared Kushner's father and their lineage was always in kind of real estate and development and just having a lot of apartment complexes. And one thing that was pretty consistent is that they were very close with the Clintons. They were very close with Democrats in as far as campaign donations and things like that. And so was Trump. So it is interesting to see all these mid-90s Democrats, or at least supporters, now support Trump. It's almost like the Republican Party got hijacked by Trump, but there's still kind of blurry lines, and maybe this is all just telling us that, listen, there is no left, no right. It's all the same. I don't know if that's what that's speaking to me. Can you guys relate to that?
Trump is the right populist movement, and what the Republicans could have done, they could have done what the Democrats did and do everything they could to stop it, which they kind of did, but they were not successful. And they were like, okay, we're just going to fall in line and run with this right populist movement. And at the end of the day, they still kind of got to curve it to the Republican establishment, even though he talked like a populist. I mean, he really didn't drain the swamp as much as he promised he was.
Yeah.
And Bernie is kind of was the left version of that. Except, the Democrats are not giving up that power. They're like, we're not doing that.
Well, Bernie's a lone wolf. And one of the things that I think it's always going to be a challenge for someone with his style is that, can you win the political battle as a lone wolf in today's polarized world?
He has allies. I mean, he's gotten work done. You can't get work done in Congress by yourself.
Well, here's the thing. He was having troubles with Elizabeth Warren, and those were one of his closest allies. And they had a falling out. And I get it. That could have been politically motivated and, to create clear lines of separation between the two. But he still had that issue, and it's rare where Bernie does go into rooms where he is like the beloved character. He's just not, that's not his branding. His branding is someone who is progressive. Yes, he speaks for the voices that are not heard and the oppressed, but it doesn't seem like he has a lot of partnerships out there.
He's beloved in progressive circles. I mean, the thing is, all the partnerships out there are like kind of corrupt. Those aren't the people he wants to partner with. He's trying to make a new brand of Democrat. Because of Bernie, we have the squad. We have more progressive people. Have a Medicare for All bill in Congress, in the Senate, and in the House. But, and one thing on the Elizabeth Warren thing, all we can say is it was a he said, she said story. All we can do is look at someone's records. 30 years ago, Bernie Sanders was saying a person of color and woman could be presidents. 30 Absolutely. Years ago, Elizabeth Warren was a woman of color and a Republican. I'm just saying.
Well,
we got to keep this in.
Woman, yes. This woman of color thing, I don't want to take away from women of color by putting Elizabeth Warren in that bucket. I know she wants to claim
I'm
it.
Saying that's what she identified but, as 30 years ago. Like, if we're keeping yes. the same energy, she tends to change stories to make herself seem like a victim. She had this one story
yes.
about her losing her first job because her first job as a special needs teacher because her first story, she said she was pregnant and she was fired. And then her second story was like, oh, no, I just, you know, I didn't feel qualified because that's not what I went to school for. And then she just kept playing up the pregnant version of the story. And it's like, and, you know, both cases could have happened, but, like, say the whole story. Just don't say segments of the story that make you more relatable to, like, hashtag woman empowerment.
Yeah, well, you know, to her point, she was getting more political clout and playing those lines. And I think that to be like, you look at Obama, for example, you know, Obama had a, you know, he had a progressive kind of sound to him or branding, but he was a centrist, you know. And
well, he didn't run as a centrist. He ran as a progressive.
When and that's my point.
He became a centrist. So what
correct.
We were buying a progressive. That's definitely who we voted for. And
correct.
That was not the same.
Correct. Enough. Who still aligned himself though with the deep state and the deep pockets. He still made Joe Biden his vice president. The same Joe Biden who was in Congress for his entire life. The same Joe Biden who was writing legislation with the Clintons in the 90s. So, you know, my point being is that at some point, Bernie was going to need to create a true solidified partnership with someone who is that deep and connected and then run with that. And the fact that he never really kind of created that link, I felt like it just left him alone to young progressives to really kind of boost himself into the office. And at the end of the day, you still need middle class voters. You still need older people to want you to be.
Middle class voters are the ones that were voting for him, though.
Middle class.
Younger middle class, but I mean like the older, more established people in the political landscape, they still looked at Bernie and there was trepidation, there was fear, there was this sense of, you know what, I don't necessarily disagree with what he's saying, but how he wants to go about it, I just can't go down that path with you.
And I just think that's unfortunate that people get scared when we think about policies that could help people. Like, no one questions how much money we spend on war every year or how much money we don't tax the 1% or corporations. But once it's a policy that could help people, once it's a policy that helps you see changes in your community, we're like, excuse me, what's the price on that? So where are we getting all this money from? And I just feel like people aren't keeping the same energy because they're getting fed whatever disbelief. Well, if it's a human centered policy, we can't buy into it.
Yes.
But if it's for, you know, killing other people in other countries that we have no business being in, I mean, then it's for the good of people. And I just think like that's a loaded BS.
Yeah. No, that's fair, and I don't disagree with your points. I guess the question I have brewing in my head is what's next? Because this was probably the last run of a Bernie Sanders. He's 78. We're probably not going to see him run again. Who's going to fill those shoes that Bernie has been able to you know, occupy for the last, you know, as far as I've been alive? Like, who's going to be that next person that's going to come out and be representative of the people? Because,
well, he had, you know, lots of people, lots of strong people, especially lots of strong women of color running his campaign. He had Nina Turner. She's a state senator from Ohio, who is the national co-chair of his campaign. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people in his campaign. Like, Bernie Sanders started the movement. He suspended his campaign, but he did not suspend this movement. All it tells the movement now is to be like, okay, now we just have to focus on local elections to get a few more AOCs.
Yeah.
Ilhan Omars, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, just to get a few more of those.
Yeah.
Because just four of those people, and we've been creating madness for the quote-unquote establishment.
Yeah.
So we just have to focus on local things, because all politics starts local.
Yeah.
As for who's the next Bernie Sanders, I mean, we'll wait and see.
No.
The one thing that I always thought was confusing was, like, who would his running mate have been was always, like, confusing because... Mm-hmm. To your point, like, Obama picked Biden because Obama, it was almost like an insurance claim.
Yeah.
Like, here's this young, progressive black dude.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, there everyone thought, like, there's a chance he might not last the 4 years. That's, here's the insurance policy, Biden.
Yeah. No, I wanted to ask you, you don't think Bernie might have picked Warren? I mean, they did get along before.
Absolutely not. Well, mainly because there's no point to pick Warren. Warren came in third place in her own state.
Yeah.
She's not bringing a swing state. Like, there's no political gain to bringing Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. You need someone who branches out or someone who can bring their own state. If you come in third in your own state, I'm sorry. You should have dropped out 2 weeks prior.
Yeah. Wow. That you know what? That's true. And I also feel that Elizabeth played the game of politics with Bernie too much, that it's hard to regain that trust. You know,
she played it way too much to the point where if she runs again, the progressive movement's not supporting her. She's not getting what she would have gotten before. Like, I personally would never vote for Elizabeth Warren ever because of
what now happened. Now, with that said, at some point, is there going to be kind of like a compromise that progressives can see in the future and saying, you know what? No one's perfect. We're probably going to have to vote for someone that respects our views. They want to represent us, but they also have sides to them that we don't agree with. And the reason why I asked that question is because I feel like a lot of progressives have this all or nothing mindset. And if you're not pure as far as the progressive movement, then you're out. And
I disagree with that.
Okay.
Because, well, I think for a lot of people, Bernie was a compromise. And another thing is, you lose all negotiating power if you compromise before you even get the position to be compromising in. Like, if you're already folding your hand before you come to the table to negotiate with the rest of Congress, then you're not getting anything you want. So,
well,
Bernie Sanders.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. So I know, I mean, I'm part of like a Baltimore Bernie group where we do canvassing, campaigning, phone banks weekly. The overwhelming majority of them are still voting blue no matter who. I had my one friend, she lives in New Jersey, she was like the only one who told me, like, I'm just not voting, I'm just voting for Trump. The overwhelming majority of them are voting blue no matter who. They're just not excited about it. They're like, okay, he'll get my vote, but he's not getting the enthusiasm, the campaigning, all the work we're putting into a campaign. I personally, I mean, because I don't live in a swing state, if I lived in a swing state, I probably would be more inclined to vote for Joe Biden. But I just, because I don't, I'm taking a privilege and I'm not voting for Joe Biden because I'm not, if it was different, I would vote for Joe Biden if he picked a progressive person as his running mate, a Nina Turner.
Okay.
Maybe an Elizabeth Warren, a Tulsi Gabbard, a progressive woman as his running mate,
Has he made any? Has he gave a hint as to who he
might pick? I mean, he said it was a woman.
Okay.
That's all he said. He said, "I'm picking a woman," which I just feel like it was just pick a qualified person.
Now, how about Amy Klobuchar?
That's not. You see, I mean. I respect Amy. I literally, and I've always said this in like the Bernie group, whenever we had debates, I'm like, look, I will never vote for her, but I respect her.
Okay.
I feel like next to Bernie, she's the most honest one there. She's saying, hey, I am the most centrist you will ever find. And she's not trying to play these games. Like, she's not trying to pretend to be something she's not, like a Pete Buttigieg or a Joe
Biden. She had some very rough debates.
She did. And
well, she's not a personable person. She really, like,
well,
no.
But that's like, not to take it another direction. That's also Bloomberg's problem. But they, you know, she needs to get that a lot. You know,
Bloomberg's problem was he was on the wrong stage. He needed to be in the Republican debates, you know.
He's like the opposite of Trump. They're just trying to get to the White House. They don't even care
I agree with that. In all fairness, though, Bloomberg was a Republican mayor. So it's kind of like the only luxury Trump has is like Trump's always walking into like free money where he wasn't a politician. So you can't hold him to any policy ever. But with Bloomberg, it's a little different because he was a Republican. He did have some very strict legislation in New York towards minorities that you can track his record and you can hold him accountable to decisions he made during his political career. But with Donald Trump, you can't. So I think Bloomberg tried to ride on that same wave that Trump did in 2016, and it just backfired on him. And to your point, Jose, he just doesn't have that personality.
I just believe he just ran as a distraction. Everyone was just running as a distraction.
Yeah.
I think he just ran to take the media's attention, to be more of a celebrity for that month and a half.
And he honestly thought he could just like buy the party, you know, and
yeah, what did he spend? $700 million?
No, but in some ways he did. In some ways he did, because they changed the debate rules just to have him on the debate stage. But the, you know, Progressive Democratic Party did not change the debate rules for an Andrew Yang, a Tulsi Gabbard, a Kamala Harris, or a Cory Booker. They did not change the debate rules to include them on debates they wouldn't have qualified for, but they changed it for this billionaire white man who had no right being there.
Sure.
To
his defense, though, he is self-made, though. I mean, he wasn't handed $1 billion. He found a way through his...
I mean, that's real good for him.
Yes. We got to give him that props, though, because...
You got to give him that credit.
I feel like, listen, at the end of the day, this is still America. It's still capitalism. And ultimately, Bloomberg is probably one of the best stories in part of American history and how to kind of make it from working class to building out an entire network and then becoming a billionaire. Now, you know, how people feel about him in present day, that's different. But to throw jabs at him for being a billionaire, I don't think it's his fault. I think he just understood how the game was played and did well with it versus to someone who is probably oblivious to the game, but still has access, still has millions, and, you know, doesn't understand the same amount of work ethic that it takes to be there that I think Bloomberg does have a good understanding of. But I'm not going to say he didn't have advantages throughout the way, I'm sure. But we're still talking about a 5'6", 5'7", guy who wasn't like some hunk of glamour and beauty and this and that. And his last name wasn't Carnegie or Rockefeller. And he still kind of paved his way through the ranks to become one of the top guys in the country. So I give him that credit. But where I do agree is that I don't think he would have had a chance in beating Trump in the presidency. And he was a disruptor in that sense. And I think that he just came into the race to say, listen, if you guys don't get your act together, well, then I'm going to jump in and figure things out. And I think the Democratic Party finally said, okay, we're going to get our act together. Instead of splitting all these votes of the larger share anyway, we're just going to consolidate our share, give it all to Biden. So that way Biden could pretty much beat out Bernie, and Elizabeth Warren stayed in the race just so she can
the progressive movement.
Yeah. And you know, it was just such a play that we get it. I don't know if a lot of people in America get it, but I think that they do, especially after 2016. But my only concern is that, man, you know, if people are really so tired of Trump, then why not Biden, right? Why not Biden? If everyone's saying I'm sick of him.
My thing is, I honestly don't believe the never Trumper exists. I believe the never Trumper exists in coast cities, like we're all along the coast on the East Coast. They definitely exist on cable news because those are the only people they'll hire. But I don't believe in the middle of the country, even in like Vermont or New Hampshire or in the South, I don't believe that Never Trump exists. I believe that people voted for Trump. They might not like the words that he said, but they're like, no, let's stand by this man. Let's give this man a fair shot. And the more that you just see on cable news them attacking Trump, no matter what he does, the more they're like, well, you know, I kind of feel sorry for him. I mean, he was acquitted on this BS impeachment.
Yeah.
I mean, they have
made that was a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah.
It was a waste of tax dollars and time, and I was not for that. And like that's, and they made Trump into the unbeatable monster he is. And then the way that everyone just dropped out to support Biden was so, I can't, because like, it really made no sense. I mean, I can't even remember his name. Pete Buttigieg had the most delegates at the time, basically. Well, he was tied. It was like right under Bernie. He shouldn't have dropped out. Amy Klobuchar shouldn't have dropped out. And honestly, it almost seemed like the establishment and Obama called them and they're like, playtime's over. Get out of the sandbox.
Yeah.
Y'all are supporting this man now.
It's and time it's to play like, ball.
You know, it really, it asks the question, why are they so scared of Bernie?
Yeah.
The Democratic establishment would rather have Donald Trump than Bernie Sanders because they'd rather have this rhetoric for the next 4 years than have someone who wants to make a difference and help working class people.
Yeah.
Fidel, don't you think that the Democratic Party just inside in their heart of hearts just really believes Bernie can't beat Trump in the national election?
I mean, I believe some do. I mean, but that's what they were preaching for the last 4 years. But I think Bernie has the best shot. I mean, and when you're looking at like non-biased independent polls, Bernie polled the best against Trump through everyone. Like you can think that, but tell me what you think that based off. If it was based off polls, Bernie performed better than everyone in polls.
Yeah.
If it was based off donations, Bernie was the only person in the race that had more single donations and donors than Donald Trump. Everyone else had less than, like, had well less than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Bernie was beating Trump by like 500,000 people, and then it was Trump, and then it was like a million deaths. It was like Elizabeth Warren. Like Bernie. So if it's based off donors, Bernie was winning. If it's based off polls, Bernie was winning. Like people had the narrative, but what was it based off of?
Yeah. Well, I hate to beat this point like a dead horse, but I just think it's because Bernie has no friends. I mean,
you see, no one can say I don't agree with that narrative because no one can say. I mean, I believe the people in Congress don't want to be friends with him because they're scared of him because he's making a brand new Democrat and he's having future AOCs come in to come and clean out Congress from instead of being the do nothing Congress, a Congress ran for and is by the people. But he does have friends in Congress. Like, he's done things in Congress. I don't think he would have kept getting elected in Congress if he never did anything or had no friends.
Here's where I think the mistake happened, though. I think that, similar to years in the past, we only have these two parties. There has to be a third party. When you had Ralph Nader running, if Bernie ran as an independent in this election cycle, this would have been the most powerful time in political history to run as an independent.
He would just split the party, though, and Donald would win by a landslide.
But that's his best shot because he wouldn't have to worry about the establishment and capitulating to their rules, because ultimately, if you want to run as a Democrat, you got to have Democrats who are going to push you in there, and you got to have corporations who are going to push you in there. And if Bernie says no to corporations and no to the DNC, and he only has his select group of associates that he's really tight-knit with, then you know what? Run as an independent. Let the people decide the vote. And whether it splits or not, you know what? That's only going to hurt Biden. That's not going to affect Trump. So then the Democratic Party are going to really have to do some soul-searching.
In theory, I want to, like, that sounds good. And, like, I mean, that's what the Green Party has tried to, you know, started out doing.
Yeah.
And, but I just, because all you need is 5% of the vote to be recognized as a national party.
Which he would have gotten.
He would have gotten. But like, I believe he believes that it's easier to fix a party, to come in and take over a party, than just start from ground zero.
That's a fair point. Well, Fidel, man, you got unbelievable political knowledge. How long have you been involved with the campaign out in Baltimore?
I don't know, probably around the second or third debate, I like was seeing what could I do. I mean, I wasn't even like a Bernie Sanders supporter from the beginning. He was in my top four, but I was just like, I was just anti-establishment. I liked Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
I mean, and even though I have my differences with her, you can't take away the work she did do as a private citizen and how she, worked during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And one thing about Elizabeth Warren and what like really, like she could have been such a great candidate is like everything she ran in Congress and became a public servant to do was literally everything in spite of like Joe Biden's career when he was for credit insurers, when he was for mass incarceration. She really ran against that and ran against creditors and everything. So I liked her. I liked Bernie. I love Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
And I almost liked her more because I think if there's anyone Democrats hate more than Bernie, it's Tulsi.
It's Tulsi.
So
yeah.
I wanted a Bernie Tulsi ticket so bad just to spit in the face of the DNC.
Yeah.
And I really liked Andrew Yang.
Who wants to give everyone $1,000? Which now he sounds like a freaking smart man.
I mean, him.
He was ahead of his time.
Reality has endorsed Bernie Sanders, and just like in CNN, they're saying like in reality has endorsed like Andrew Yang as well, because like, hey, having a nationalized, socialized healthcare system doesn't sound crazy now when like people who don't have access to a doctor, how would they get tested for the coronavirus?
Yeah.
Like, how would that happen? And if they can't get tested, they would keep spreading it.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point.
And raising a minimum wage to a livable wage, like, would you want to be working at a supermarket 10-hour shifts right now for $15 an hour?
No.
I don't think I would.
That's fair.
Because essential workers aren't the billionaires, CEOs, millionaires. Those essential workers are people who are left behind, working class, less than working class. And that's who,
Not entirely. I think that, we're missing out a whole sector of hospitality workers, in the gig economy. Between the gig economy and hospitality workers, I mean, they've been devastated by this.
True, but I'm just talking about people most affected by this. Like, well, they are affected too, but I mean, like, the people, just grocery store clerks, nurses.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know people who are doctors that are out in the trenches, nurses that are out there in the trenches. Jose and I talked about this earlier today, but, these families are at risk. You go, you're treating all these sick people. Yes, you're taking all the precautions that you need to, but you don't know when that day is going to happen where, you come home and you may be infected and you're at risk every time you put on those scrubs and you're going out there to help the sickest of the bunch that are coming into these ERs and healthcare clinics to get testing who are just, quite frankly, really, really sick. So I agree that those people are being over leveraged right now. The government definitely needs to step up. I will say that you look at some other countries, though, that do have a centralized form of healthcare. They're not faring as well as us, though. They're not doing as well as us. Italy and Spain, they have some form of centralized healthcare system. They have more deaths percentage wise. We have more overall deaths, but we've also tested a lot more people. We have a lot more people who we've shown in our numbers to be infected. And compared to those countries, our death rates are much lower, probably half as much compared to those countries. So
But those countries, the virus kind of peaked there before they have. So we haven't, no one's out of it yet. So we haven't even seen the peak of it yet.
Yeah, we're in the middle of that quote unquote peak that people have been waiting for, like the apocalypse. But
not like the apocalypse, but just waiting for the run to go, like for the trial to go.
Yeah,
it seems to be breaking in New York now. It seems the numbers in the hospitals are going
correct.
They're staying level and hopefully dropping soon.
Correct. The peak has reached its point in New York. I think New York has reached that peaking moment this week, where in the next 2 weeks you're going to be seeing more of going down that slope, and then New York was the first one, right? So then other cities is probably within your city too, Fidel, and then other parts of the country, they're going to start seeing what New York kind of experienced in the next weeks moving forward. So to your point, I do agree with that. My whole thing with healthcare, and I know we're running pretty long on this one, but I love having these conversations. And to everyone listening, this is what happens when you get in a room with Philpos, okay? You're going to be debating politics. You're going to be talking sports. You're going to just get into it. And you better have your facts right, because, we'll be ready for you. But, to my point, I think that healthcare in general should not be, and people are going to kill me that know me for saying this, but it should not be a business like finance.
It shouldn't.
That's the biggest problem I have with it. I'm not saying that, we should just bring the government to do every single task within healthcare. But my point is that there should be restrictions similar to, like, look, in finance, we put restrictions because we just felt that people were making very dangerous bets. So we put in systems in place to protect them from themselves. Never mind having to deal with sick people and death. When you're dealing with healthcare, I think that there should be even more oversight, and there needs to come to question when people are tripling or quadrupling their profits, not expanding your board of directors and giving everyone a handshake because you've made more money. But it should be, okay, we should run in question why we're making so much more. Are we really dispersing what we need to back into the hospitals and resources back for the people? And it's for pharmaceuticals, it's for insurance companies, and obviously these large hospital establishments. And I think that there is going to come a point where we can't run these companies like they're just flat out banking institutions. We just can't long term. It's not going to sustain itself.
That's how they have been running, and that's the whole. That's why there's such a a movement behind a Medicare for All system, because it's not about the people, it's about money. And mm-hmm. if you just look at the stock market, the health, even though we've been on a constant decline for like trending downward for mm-hmm. the past several months.
Yeah.
On the day after Super Tuesday, all health insurance companies jumped like 12 points. Yeah. And just this week, when Bernie Sanders dropped out, health insurance companies jumped like 10 points. Like, that should show something.
Yeah.
That should say something. Like, how disgusting it is that these people are like, oh, okay, your jobs aren't going away. And these companies are making, corporations are making billions of dollars. And meanwhile, people here, if they have cancer, they're getting their medical bills will like run up in terms of like $100,000. And people can't afford to pay that. You can't afford to get sick.
Yeah,
in, like, the greatest country in the world, you shouldn't die from being too poor.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I even like the things that that the president has talked about, the hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine. Try to say that 10 times faster. but, these are proven, tested medications that have been used for malaria, that have been used for Lyme disease, that have been used for so many different things that help with either it's your white blood cells or something to create a better immune response to this virus. And the fact that people have been attacking them for just recommending it, it's like, listen, people in France have praised this miracle drug, they call it, in India, in so many other countries. And it's like, you come here and people are against it because the establishment doesn't want to hear that. They want you to use their drugs that they're telling you about. They don't want you to bring in any new ideas mm-hmm. to the table. And
they want their drugs that they're profiting off of.
Yes. And I saw that and I was just like, you know what? This is a classic tell sign when you're kind of upsetting the apple cart now, bringing in, oh, what are you doing talking about hydroxychloroquine, or, you know, however you pronounce it. And that was just a classic example of that. So healthcare, I don't know what the future holds with that, especially with Joe Biden. You know, with Trump, I think at the end of the day, Trump has proven, and some people on other talk shows I've been listening to have said that, you know, he's too lazy to even be a dictator right now. And people were saying that if you really wanted to be a dictator, this would be the perfect time to do it, because we are at the mercy of our leadership. And he has shown that he's actually not for centralization. He's been kind of putting this on the governments and other governors and other people to say, listen, manage your front lines and then we'll kind of disperse as we go. But this is not just going to be all handled where the federal government comes in and has all the medical staff in all 50 states with all the equipment and all the support and we're all doing it. And then that's it. This problem goes away. It's like, no, the states have to step up to do some of the infrastructure stuff. And that was, to me, a good sign in saying, listen, he's not trying to be a dictator, which a dictator would love this moment right now.
No, definitely. Fidel, I wanted to ask you, do you think that this virus is probably like significantly hurting his chances at, you know, winning re-election?
No, if anything, I think it's helping.
You think it's helping? The way New York is in, the way his home state's in absolute disaster mode right now?
I mean, I don't, but his, if we go state by state, this man was never winning New York anyway.
No, yeah. I get that, but.
Yeah. I believe the people who are voting for Trump do not believe, half of them don't even believe this is a real thing. I mean, death counts, you know, percentages, you know, CNN can scream from the top of their lungs. That people just refuse to acknowledge it. Yes. So I believe, but all they see is a man trying to do leadership, and they see people attacking him for trying to make things better, even though it's, you know, the Trump version of better. But still, they see this man putting in effort and everyone just taking collective shit on him. So I personally think it's helping him. I believe if he was running against a Bernie Sanders, then it would have hurt him, because it would have been like, oh, if we look at Bernie's policies, hey, maybe things would have been just a little bit better. But because he's running against Joe Biden, who struggles to put together a complete sentence, I mean, this is
his guilt. Hurting.
I mean,
no, that's a fair point, and I agree with that point. I think Trump does have a better chance with all this, because all this will pass and Trump will be the man standing in the midst of this crisis, of this war, as they say it is. And, you know, he's going to be in a good position heading into November. And, you know, in closing, I just want to thank you both for coming on the show. It's something I've been wanting to do for a while. You know, any last words that you want to share with us, Fidel?
I just wanted to read this tweet I saw earlier.
Yes.
Because it was going around the stimulus packages being given from world governments. So in the UK, and these are for affected workers, they're not, you know, for everyone, just the people whose work were affected by the virus. They were giving 80% of the workers' salary. In Denmark, they're giving them 75%. In South Korea, they're giving 70%. Netherlands, 90%. Canada is giving each person affected 2,000 per month. Australia, 1,000 per month. And the United States of America is giving their citizens $1,200 at just a one-time check of $1,200, from what I keep reading from it, it seems like you were going to have to pay back that $1,200 through like an increased tax rate. That's not confirmed, because I see it on some things, I don't see it. It's not really clear where they're getting it from, but it seems like it's what we would get from future tax returns.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the government's working, but they're not working hard enough for the stimulus packages. I mean, I'm lucky and privileged. I have a career where I can work from home.
Yes.
But like, it's a shame for people who are effective.
Yeah. No, well, that's America, you know. And that,
no, that's capitalism.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Fidel, thank you for your insight. I'm gonna lean on you for more political analysis. I definitely appreciate your view on all the stuff that's going on. And Jose, thank you for hopping on the show as well. Any last words you want to share, man, before we hop off?
Just Fidel, hang in there. You know, there'll be another big candidate you can get behind, you know, hopefully in 4 years, you know, and that's it.
It's okay because, you know, they created a movement. It's about local candidates too. And, you know, it's not the last of the progressive movement. I mean, that's what his motto was. It's not me, us. It's about the movement.
I truly do think that, you know, they kind of just teased him for 8 years. I don't think he was ever going to get that, you know, that fair shot. But, you know, another fun debate, and I really enjoyed it. And I just look forward to the next one as we, you know, quarantine. And
yeah, well,
take it one day at a time.
As we quarantine, without a doubt, there will be more of these. So, everyone, thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you then. Peace out.